You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. HRN is food radio supported by you. Learn more at heritageradionetwork.org.
This episode of Cutting the Curd is brought to you by Comté Cheese Association. Comté, an iconic cheese from the Jura Mountains of France, favored by cheesemongers and cheese lovers all over the world. Find out more at comté-usa.com. That's comté-usa.com.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Cutting the Curd on the Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Kara Warren, and I just want to give a really big shout out to the American Cheese Society for the conference last week. It was great. A huge thank you to their teams and the committees that put it together. It was super amazing to see everyone again, reconnect, and I think a lot of healing happened at this year's ACS. So a little bit of a side note, but I wanted to make that a mention for this episode of the Cutting the Curd. And I also wanted to announce the winners of the conference, just so everyone knows who wasn't able to get to the conference this year. First place went to Whitney by Jasper Hill. There was a tie for second place. It was a Flagship with Beecher's Handmade Cheese, Bamboozle out of Pittsburgh by Goat Rodeo Farm and Dairy. And then in third was Greensward by Jasper Hill and the collab with Murray's Cheese and their team. With that note, I wanted to get into today's show. Today we have Kara Condon, a cheesemonger from Beautiful Rind, and the most recent winner of CMI, Cheesemonger Invitational, in case for some listeners who don't know. Kara, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much for having me.
Yeah, it's a Kara versus Kara episode. I love it.
I know. Best team ever.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. So I'm curious. I want to get right into the competition and almost break it down like level by level, because I feel like there are more levels than when I did it many years ago. Starting with, it's multiple choice, correct? Is the first level to break down this competition, right?
Yes.
Okay, yes. Cool. So my first thing I wanted to throw at you was, were there any standout questions for you that you remember from the exam or from the test there that, you're like, wow, that threw me for a loop? Or did you get all of them right? Did they give you your like feedback? Do you know how many you got right and wrong?
You know, I actually don't know. I don't remember that part. We get a lot of feedback returned back to us.
Yeah. No. Okay. Well, did you study for it then? Actually, was there like?
Did not study for the written test.
Wow.
I know, maybe it was a ballsy move, but I was really focused on, like, you know, the perfect bites, the perfect pairings, and all of that, that I didn't really focus too much on that, and I was really hoping that, you know, the last 10 years of being in the industry would just kind of get me through the test, and I took the CCP exam in 2017. So I did bring out some of my old flashcards, but I never really got to dig in as much as I wanted to. Okay. So with the written test, I just kind of was like, all right, I'm just going to use what I've got already.
That's okay. So I'm curious then, was it your work at, so I cheated and looked at, well, I know that you work at Beautiful Rind, but you also worked at Pastoral, which I didn't realize. So
yeah.
Was that your first cheese shop? Is that the...
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I got hired there almost 10 years ago in November, and I had no cheese experience previously. I had had a bite of Pleasant Ridge Reserve at a beer tasting once, and I was like, oh my God, what is this? And I had to ask, like, you know, who are you? Like, what is your role? Like, who are you, cheese lady? It kind of blew my mind that there were all of these amazing cheeses. The Pleasant Ridge Reserve, I had never had a cheese like that.
That was your moment.
That was my moment of, holy shit, there's so much I need to eat. And I started, you know, buying, you know, nicer cheeses at like the markets. But I remember the first time I walked into Pastoral, I was too nervous to talk to anyone. So I bought a San Pellegrino soda and I left. Very quickly.
But then how did you went back somehow? You had the nerves to go back.
Yeah. I took a couple months to keep eating more cheese, and I was like, all right, I'm gonna try it. And so I've been working in a warehouse, and that wasn't getting me anywhere. I wanted to get a job as a graphic designer, and that just wasn't cutting it. And so I was like, well, whatever, I might as well just get a job where I can, you know, maybe not be so tired after work. Working in the warehouse was, you know, physically exhausting, and there's no air conditioning, and those summers were hot. And so I figured maybe a retail job will be a little bit more straightforward. I'll have more free time that I could focus on my portfolio and get my big grown up, big girl job. And, you know, obviously that none of that happened. I stayed in cheese because I found that I very much loved it right away.
Oh man. I love that. Cause no one intends to be in cheese. It's kind of always a windfall in some ways. So I love that. Okay. Running back now to the exam, CMI, I keep calling it an exam. That's silly. It's like the championship of all levels of cheese. so there was the multiple choice, and then what follows after that? Do you remember?
Yeah. So then we moved into a taste test. And so it was five different PDO cheeses. We had to identify the name of them, the country of origin, the milk treatment, and type. That was another thing that I was like, oh God, I don't know that I have time to like study for this. Oh, because I had signed up 2 weeks before.
Oh.
So I was scrambling to get everything ready. So I kind of had to prioritize how much time I was spending on some of the preparation. So I knew I wasn't going to sit around and practice my blind tasting test, you know, tasting muscles or whatever. I knew that I just had to, you know, maybe focus on the other challenges. But I did pretty well on the taste test. I know I identified at least three by name. So I got all the other, you know, attributes.
So you got 3 out of 5, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's awesome. That's pretty cool. So that goes to show you right there how beautiful rind and pastoral and like the cheesemongering work that you have done already, like really helped out there. Because again, to figure out the milk type, I mean, there's no rind showing on this, right? It's just the cheese is cut. So it's really like, you can't tell what it is.
I think there must've been, I would imagine there had to have been rind.
Okay. All right. So then, okay. You get through the taste test, and then is it perfect bite time? No,
you gotta wait. Hold on. There's so much to do. It's a busy day. It's like a 10-hour day. Like
this is like insane to me.
it's a shift, you know? And so then we moved on to a few cut tests and like paper wrapping. So we were, I think it was like 45 seconds. Where we were given a cheese, and we had to do 2 quarter-pound cuts, and you got points for how close you were to a perfect 0.25. And then you had to take those cuts and do a paper wrap for like, you know, for purchase or retail wrap, and then do a plastic like glass wrap on 2 other pieces. So there was like a half wheel and like a quarter wheel of Alpine cheeses.
And how did you fare on that? Because I love the glass. Like glass wrapping is still my favorite thing to do. Even at home, I like try to show off. I'm like,
it's so satisfying.
Invisible.
It's such a weird, satisfying thing to do and do well. I only wrapped one of my cheeses. I didn't realize because there were like two wrap stations. And I thought it was, and I was like the last contestant going. My number was like 23. So I was actually the last person to do a lot of these things. And so because I was an odd number, I thought two people were supposed to be wrapping at the same time. So I didn't know I had another cheese to wrap. So I spent like the 45 seconds doing the one and you're maybe 35 seconds. And then I was like, okay, so now what? And they're like, you have to wrap that one. I'm like, oh, shoot. So that was a bozo move on my part too. So I didn't walk away feeling like, oh my gosh, I'm nailing it. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, you're not really comparing yourself to other people there. So it's just, you're like, oh, I don't know how I felt about that one. Just keep going. Just mm-hmm. keep going. Cause there's not, Adam Moskowitz is, you know, adamant over and over again that it is not a competition. But it's true. You know, I wasn't looking at the other mongers like, oh gosh, I got to up my game. I saw them do, something. It's like, no, we were all helping each other. It was not, I'm not a very competitive person. I never really had that instinct during CMI.
It's a very humble industry. I think that's why so many of us get along so well. The egos are, there are some, but not too many. So I love that.
Ego doesn't get you very far.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, so you did a cut and wrap. What happens after cut and wrap?
Well, then it was the aroma test. And I had just had my hands all over some stinky Alpine dogs. So I was like, I couldn't smell anything. And the tasters, but you're not tasting them. The smellers, the little vials that we're smelling were pretty tiny. So I got a perfect zero
on the aroma really
test. Yes. And I was like, oh my God, I swear I have a nose. It was kind of embarrassing, but, and that was actually the only score I saw. And they gave us our feedback like folders, before the finals were announced or while they were being announced. So I was trying to pay attention, but I also was kind of curious to see, I was so excited to see all this feedback. And I opened up the folder and the first thing I saw was the zero on the aroma test. And I was like, oh, I'm not too worried about making the finals. Cause I didn't think I'd have a shot after, completely bombing one of the challenges.
You were a major underdog as far as I'm hearing right now. Like this is insane.
Yeah.
Oh, my
goodness. I was not like going into finals thinking like, oh yeah, I've got it. I was just like, oh, I don't know. I saw my zero on the aroma test. So I was like, oh, I don't have to worry about going up on stage.
Right. Sure.
Oops.
Little did you know.
And then I was the last person to get called on stage. So like, I've heard all these names get called. I'm like, oh my gosh, there's no chance I'm getting called. This is kind of great. Cause I was really nervous. I was pretty outspoken on thinking that I had no interest in being on stage. And I guess maybe interest, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm.
I was scared. I didn't want to do anything on stage. And so I was telling people, I was like, oh, I just want to get sixth place. So I could do really well, but not have to be in front of people. I was just nervous.
I was the same way. I would always say, oh, I'll take 11th. That'll be the best for me.
Yeah. Like,
good enough.
I was just happy to be there and to be doing it.
All right. So we just finished the aroma test. What's mm-hmm. next after aroma now?
So then it was salesmanship. And so we had our little fake cheese shop. And I was picking out cheeses for a graduation party. 10 people, and there was one pregnant guest, so they were looking for pasteurized cheeses, and I gave her, I think it was Mount Tam, and Rispins, which I still am unsure of if it's, I think it's raw.
But you made it charming. You somehow.
Oh, no, it is pasteurized. Okay, I just looked it up. Yeah, okay. I was like, I was able to get her two pasteurized cheeses, and that was fun. I think I did pretty well on that. And then it went on to the perfect beverage, perfect slate, and perfect bite.
All right. There's three now. I keep thinking there's only two. That's amazing. Okay. So talk to us first about your perfect bite. What was it? How did you prepare for it?
So the perfect bite, I was assigned Rogue's Caveman Blue. I was kind of stoked because on my first day at Pastoral, they were opening the Bar Pastoral, which was the adjoining wine bar business. And so a lot of the cheesemakers were in town. I know Alison Hooper was there. And I met Dave Gremmels, like, my first day. And they were like, oh, this is a cheesemaker. And it was in November, so Rogue River Blue was just about to come out. And I had just learned that that was, like, the best cheese in the U.S. And this is, you know, 2012. It was really making waves. Still is. It was so cool to meet such a big deal dude right away. And I was like, oh my gosh, like, if this is how it's going to go, I'm meeting cheesemakers every day. Holy cow. So to be able to have to work with a rogue cheese for CMI was really cool and full circle-y and kind of have like a nice connection to it. One of my early fun cheese, you know, epiphanies was blue cheese and chocolate. I remember trying Chiriboga Blue and a chocolate-covered Piedra, like, maybe on my stage. And, like, I wasn't even hired at Pastoral yet. And I was like, holy heck, what is going on? What is in my mouth? Like, blue cheese and chocolate, this is nuts. Like, it was, like, the first of many wow moments for me. And so that was kind of what I wanted to honor, maybe. So I used a mini toast, and I had this chocolate ganache that was made with a stout beer that had some almond in it. And for how much beer was used in the ganache, I'm shocked that, like, the almond kind of really came through, which I think really was a good, which was awesome. And I was really pleased with that because it kind of helped bring out a little bit of, like, the vanilla flavors of the cheese. And I topped it with a, like, dried cherry that I had soaked in orange juice. So it was kind of like, I don't even know what you call it, but it was like a reconstituted dried cherry, and it had nice acidity to it because of the orange juice, and there was, like, some extra sugar and stuff.
That sounds amazing. That sounds really, really cool. I mean, I love that you had that inspiration. You added the beer to it, the stout beer. That actually reminded me that you worked at Goose Island. So you have, yeah, like a beer background as well.
Yes.
That it,
yes,
sounds like influenced your perfect bite in such a way that was really awesome.
Yeah, a little subtlety there. And then I topped it with a little bit of dried thyme, or fresh thyme, I guess.
Oh.
Just for a little savory, and kind of help with the cherry and kind of help balance out some of the sweetness to it.
I didn't expect that. That's very, yeah, cool. Oh, yeah. I could see how that, like, started the judges on, like, their mind, because cheese and chocolate is, like, amazing, but to bring it up to the next levels where there's a twist on it,
yeah,
I like that you put fresh thyme to it. That's cool.
Yeah.
Okay, so you got your perfect bite done. Then is it perfect slate that you have to, mm-hmm, think about? What is that exactly?
We had, like, a half hour. We were assigned a cheese. So for this one, I had Holler Hawker, another cheese I was more than stoked to get.
Do you know in advance that you get Holler Hawker, or is it a surprise situation?
No. So I found out as soon as I had a, like,
once you applied.
Yeah.
Okay. Right, so it's away, not like in the moment of the competition. They're like, here's this cheese, make a slate. Okay. So you have notice. No. Well, yeah, you never know. I mean, it is Cheesemonger Invitational.
Right.
they could throw you under the bus. You never, yeah, know. Okay. So perfect slate. Yeah. Holler Hawker. Yep.
I had time. I came in with a plan. I also had to fly with all of this food. So
really?
I had to, like, get it. Oh yeah. I live in Chicago, so I was staying with a friend in Queens, and I didn't want to do any cooking in her house, because that seemed pretty obnoxious. And also the days leading up to it, we're in education sessions that are intense. It's 9 to 5. We get, like, little breaks here and there, but, it, you know, at the end of the day, your brain's kind of saturated.
Yeah.
So I really wanted to get all my stuff done ahead of time. So I had to, you know, travel with all of this stuff. So I had to go in with a really solid plan. That's why the 2 weeks leading into the competition, I was really focused on getting all of those things in order.
Okay. Okay. That makes sense. So, yeah. Okay. So you planned for it. And by planning, does that mean like you have to think about the shapes and like what else goes on the slate? Because I'm trying to remember this part of it, but I always confuse like perfect bite a little bit with the perfect slate, I think, because they're sort of similar. So what makes the perfect slate, you know, that?
So the perfect slate is meant to be like a two-person, like appetizer, starter sort of composed cheese plate. So if it has a theme, that's cool, but it just needs to be like cohesive. It needs to serve two people. I know it sounded, based on the parameters that we were given, it sounded like a lot of times people do, you know, a whole pound of cheese on there and they're like, that's, you know, that's not what you're looking for. I think I ended up putting like only four little long triangles of Holler Hocker on it. Trying to make sure that it was, you know, portioned appropriately. And then I also had some Lady Edison ham. I had cherry mostarda. I had made a, like an almond brittle. And
can you tell me about the almond brittle, by the way? Because I've heard through a friend, our similar friend, about this almond brittle. And it wasn't just like a first run at the almond brittle. You tried it twice, from what I understand.
Yeah. And actually, I made an orgeat. I believe that's what it's called. Part of the concept for my perfect plate was playing off of the intersection of tiki and alpine flavors. So I wanted to work with like almond, cherry, pineapple, and I mean, I think ham works in both situations as well. So I was kind of playing around with that. So I had made the orgeat, which is commonly found in tiki drinks. And so then I used that to make an almond brittle. So it was like super, super almondy. And then I tossed it in an orange salt that I had made. Like I zested an orange and then like kind of rubbed salt together in with it to kind of aromatize.
No, that sounds amazing. I love
where
you're
going
on that.
And so there was that like brightness to it, but it was still salty and sweet and had that little bit of citrus lift to it. So that was really fun. I was really proud of that. And then I also had some rum raisins on the slate.
Wow. I mean, that is so cool. I love that it's an alpine tiki combo.
But it wasn't ever trying to be like tiki or, you know, it was just like that, like little nod to it.
Okay. Subtle. It wasn't like over the top.
No. And then I had like some chive blossoms on the plate as well for some color.
Damn. I want to get the recipe for the almond brittle and actually the whole thing. I really do. I mean, it just sounds good. I like just want to eat this.
Yeah. And the thing was, I also wanted to keep it pretty straightforward. I didn't want to get too wild with it. So that was, I don't know.
It was very easy to do.
Be like restrained and still inspired, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. That's good. Balance. Good for you that you like knew the line. I messed it up when I did it. It was, I went too far. So I'm glad you had the mindset to be subtle. That's awesome. All right, so we got two out of the three pairing orientated situations. The last one, perfect pairing, is a
beverage.
Drink combo.
Yeah,
cool.
Uh-huh.
So what's that?
So, this was weird too. So I was still in that tiki mindset a little bit, and I was thinking about tiki drinks with Holler, because Holler Hocker was my cheese for the perfect beverage as well.
Okay.
And one of my good friends is a bartender and loves all of those, you know, fun fruity drinks. And so I was like, we were working on maybe trying a few of the like the coffee based tiki drinks with Holler Hocker. And we were doing recipes and, you know, we tried a few things and nothing was tasting good. And he had this giant, like clown sized bottle of Galliano Ristretto, which is like an Italian coffee liqueur. And the bottle itself, I have like the 375 milliliter bottle in my house right now, and it's like as tall as a wine bottle. The 750 is like two wine bottles tall. It is an absurd thing to have in your house, and it's hard to find and buy. I don't know that it's popular anymore, but we tried that, and we're like, okay, the coffee liqueur on its own is interesting and cool, but it's not right. And then we tried the pineapple juice on its own, and we're like, okay, that's cool too, but it's not right. And then we were like, what if we just mix the two of them together? Like, just as a starting point, just as a, you know, let's see what we can do. And I tasted that, and I was like, nope, that's it.
Wow.
Somehow, those two things, which I still do not think sound very enticing. and I tried it with other coffee liqueurs. I tried it with other, like, options. It had to be the Galliano Ristretto. And then I garnished it with a dried orange peel, and that kind of helped bring out the pineapple acidity. It kind of balanced it out a little bit more. And I think with the Hollerhocker, it ended up being such a fun pairing. And it was, the journey was just as fun for me too. And I was really excited to present this as a pairing option for Hollerhocker. And so, like, when I finally had that nailed down, I was like, okay, let's do this thing. Cool. I was feeling good.
It is very unexpected sounding, I will say.
It sounds bonkers, and it just turned out so well.
Okay, so perfect beverage, done. And you had artwork to display with this. How did that look? What was it?
I went real simple. I just, that morning I made a few, like, typography-based signs on Canva and printed them at my friend's house. I wasn't going to mess around with illustrations or get too fancy. I wrote a little blurb explaining each pairing, or like each, you know, the concept, or kind of gave like a little information about each thing. But otherwise I kept it pretty clean and pretty straightforward.
Actually, your graphic design side of your life probably really helped out on this point, I would imagine.
Yeah, I did go to school for that, and have been doing that at all of my jobs since then.
So. Mark, you've done some marketing for the cheese shops, you're saying, a little bit.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay. That's cool to know about you. I didn't realize that side of you. Cheese and marketing. Yeah. There it is.
That's my jam.
Love it. Love it. Okay, cool. Well, right now I'd love for us to take a quick break before we get to the onstage stuff. So, hey everyone, you're listening to Cutting the Curd with me, Kara Warren, and my guest, Kara Condon. So Kara versus Kara, and we will be right back.
This episode of Cutting the Curd is brought to you by Conte Cheese Association. Conte Cheese Association represents the Conte PDO, Conte Protected Designation of Origin, in the USA. Conte is a raw milk, cooked, pressed cheese from the Jura Mountains of France. There, every day, 2,500 family farms deliver milk to over 150 local cheesemaking facilities, or fruitiers. This milk must be transformed into Conte within 24 hours of milking to preserve the lactic microflora in the milk, ensuring the cheese's aromatic potential. About 105 gallons of milk are required to craft a single wheel of Conte. Conte takes time to acquire its flavors in the affinage cellars. After 8 months of aging by dedicated affineur on average, each wheel of Conte is graded and shipped to market. No wheel of Conte is the same. Its flavors speak to the pastures where the cows grazed, the season in which it was made, the particular craftsmanship of the cheesemaker, and the time spent in the aging cellar. Therefore, every wheel of Conte is unique. Learn more about Conte, an iconic cheese from the Jura Mountains of France, favored by cheesemongers and cheese lovers all over the world. Find out more at conte-usa.com. That's conte-usa.com.
Hi, I'm Harry Rosenblum from the Time for Lunch podcast. And one way that Heritage Radio Network has impacted me is it has given me the opportunity to sit down and talk with hundreds of people from all over the world and different cultures. And it is always eye-opening, the things that I learn and get to share on Heritage Radio Network.
HRN is home to transformative exchanges about food. We hope our diverse lineup of shows opens your eyes, educates, and empowers. Join us during our summer membership drive by donating and becoming a member. Members play an essential role in keeping nonprofit food radio on the air. Go to heritageradionetwork.org/donate to become a member today. Thank you for your support.
Hey everyone, welcome back to Cutting the Curd. I'm your host, Kara Warren, and I'm here with Kara Condon, the amazing CMI winner of 2022. She is just filling us in on all the different levels that it takes to get through this competition. Right now, I'm excited to get to the on stage bit because unless I missed a level, but I think it, you should be almost at the stage part right now. Am I right?
Yeah, no, we're ready.
Okay, cool.
We're ready.
I mean, it's a lot you had to go through. So they go through, is it go to top five right away? Or is there like a little bit, is there like a top 10 they first go to? I'm trying to remember this.
No. So you have no idea on standings or anything. Like you don't know how you're doing at all. Which I think is kind of nice because then you're not worried about it. Like I said, I got my feedback folder and peeped at my zero on the aroma test. So I was like, oh, I'm off the hook. but there was like some downtime after the 10th challenge. And we get to mingle and, you know, chit chat with everyone and be like, okay, what did you think about this? And what, oh, how'd you do there? And how are you feeling? And it's a anxious 2 hours before they announce the winners.
Oh, that's a long time actually. So yeah, were you nervous at this point?
I was content, I would say. Like I was happy with everything that had happened. I wasn't feeling particularly confident, so that's not really
right.
Ever something I would feel, especially in a competition situation. I was relieved to be done with the main part of it. And I was hoping to not have to go on stage.
Right. So, okay, let me flip this on you. When did you know that you might win CMI? When did it start to settle in that you were like closing in on a win?
When they read the second place name.
Oh, no way.
It got like at the very, oh yeah. They called the third place name and I was like, that's not my name. And then they called the second place name and that wasn't my name either. And I was like, what the fuck just happened? I was like, there are so many pictures of me looking like a ghost lady. I mean, even during the finals, I never thought I was going to win the whole thing at all.
Well, because
there was never, ever that inkling.
Right. So, but like when you're on stage, you have to have like a coherent message. So when they're asking you questions to like about what your favorite cheese is, or I mean, how were you able to think on stage? Because I feel like I would have some stage fright or something. Like, how did that
work? Oh, me too. The first question they ask is, what's your favorite cheese? And even though I'm in a room surrounded by cheesemakers and cheeses, it's hard to think of any one cheese. You know, like, there's so many. How do I pick one? Like, I'm a monger. People have asked me my favorite cheese for, you know, 10 years. And I still don't have a good answer for that. But I figured start with my first favorite, Pleasant Ridge Reserve. So that's what I talked about. And I was really nervous on stage at first. And then I started to, like, after the second or third round or whatever on stage, I started to get a little bit more comfortable and relaxed and was like, I'm just going to enjoy that. And that's when my best friend threw the Bulls jersey up to me. And I was like, okay, yeah. Let's put that on. Let's do this. Let's have some fun.
Yeah, I think that was great too. I mean, it was cool. I was like, this girl is repping Chicago in the best kind of way.
Well, yeah. My good buddy Jordan Edwards from the pastoral days, he had sent me a picture of his Rodman jersey that morning, and I wear a Pippen jersey typically, but he'd wear his Rodman, I'd wear Pippen, and so he was like, I got this on, good luck today. And I texted my best friend who I knew was going to show up later, and she has that beautiful gold Jordan jersey, and I was like, Maggie, just in case I do well, will you bring it? And so she was standing next to me when my name got called, and she's like trying to get it out of her purse and hand it to me so I can take it up on stage with me. And I was just like, oh no, that's weird, I feel stupid now, like, no, I don't want that, we're just like abort, like, we're good, change plans. And so then after, you know, a few rounds on stage, I was like, whatever, give me that jersey. There's a cute picture of Reese like tying it on me, and I was just like, I don't know what to do, here we go, let's do it.
It's perfect.
Yeah,
so okay, you finally win CMI, which is a huge honor. I not many women have done so I was thrilled to see you be the top of the pack there, which is really really cool, so super congratulations.
Thank you.
How has it changed your life since?
It's been strange. I mean, I certainly didn't go with the intent to win. So that was pretty shocking to then have to, like, cause then everyone's like, okay, so what are you doing next? I'm like, oh gosh, I don't know. I didn't know what I was doing. That's why I did this in the first place, to kind of help me figure it out.
Right.
But I mean, people have been coming into the shop nonstop, and I've been on AM radio a lot. So I'm hitting the AM radio listeners pretty hard, and they're coming into the shop. It's funny how many people actually announce it to me and say, oh, I heard you on the radio, or, oh, who's the owner of the shop? I heard them on NPR, or like, and I'm like, oh, that was me, you know? And it's just, everyone wants to talk about it, and I didn't expect that to happen. I mean, most of that is because of the New York Times coverage,
right?
Which was, I mean,
there's a picture of you in the New York Times, right?
Yeah. What? Like it. What? That is what?
That is
I'm
amazing.
Still, in shock. But I was surprised that so many, you know, customers would get wind of this.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, they love coming in. We have people asking if I'm going to be there when they're making their reservations, and people like wanting to take pictures of me. Like, it's bizarre.
Wow.
Someone told me the other day, they're like, oh, you're just so humble. Like, what did you expect? I'm a cheesemonger. Like, I don't know what would you, did you want me to like pull some like Gordon Ramsay? Did you want me to yell at you? Like, what are you looking for here?
Oh my goodness. I love that. There's so much curd nerd love out there.
Yeah.
That's freaking great. Okay. So besides bragging rights, what else did you win?
So there's the cash prize. So that was pretty, pretty exciting for me.
Yeah.
And then there are trips. So there's a finalist trip, which I don't have any details on just yet. And then there's like a European trip for the first place winner. So,
well done.
I think I might get to go to Switzerland in September.
Okay. That makes sense. I'll have to look forward to your recap on that.
Oh my God. I can't wait.
Oh, cool. That's very cool. I haven't been to Switzerland myself yet. It's on my list. Really cool.
I haven't been either. So it'll be very cool.
Yeah, definitely. Well, one of my final questions is, what advice would you offer to cheesemongers competing in upcoming CMIs?
You got to go with an open heart. There's so much value in the education and the camaraderie between the mongers leading up to it. you know, there was something really special. The first day Adam asked us, you know, who's nervous? And we all raised our hands. We were like shaking and like sweating and acting like losers. And, you know, he was like, okay, that's not what this is about. You're here to learn. You're here to do it. And every day he'd ask us who was nervous. And even the day of, he asked us, okay, who's nervous now? And by that time we were, had all lost our nerves. We were all just in it. And it was just such a cool transformation. I guess my only advice is to do it and do it with a you know, an open heart.
Great. I love it. I mean, that's the true nature of cheesemongers that you were talking about. So I love that. It's perfect. Kara, I just want to say thank you for coming on the show today. This has been a pleasure.
This has been so fun. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, totally. Well, and I look forward to your future news, Switzerland plus other cheesemongering or cheese-related gigs. I can see you're going to go far in the biz. So I'm looking forward into learning more from you as you go through this cheese life. So I just want to say big thank you for that. Now to the listeners out there, I just want to say, please follow Kara on Instagram at Kara_Ann. And you can follow us at Cutting the Curd or myself at Kara Warren. And please listen and subscribe to Cutting the Curd via Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. Thanks and eat more cheese.
Mm-hmm. Cutting the Curd is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. Keep in touch at heritageradionetwork.org/subscribe.